In the 1350s, Giovanni Boccaccio wrote the Decameron, about a group of men and women who fled from the city of Florence to escape the Black Plague that was striking fear into all of Europe. During the evenings in their hideout on the countryside, they passed the time by telling each other stories. Those stories have now become classics. In the spring of the year 2020 AD, during the worldwide lockdown caused by the coronavirus pandemic, a group of men and women will once again gather to discuss the stories that light a fire in our imagination.
Good afternoon, culture vultures. And if you're watching this in America, good morning. He has been called the most dangerous philosopher in the world and the most dangerous man in the world. And today he is joining us to talk about the American cult TV show, Twin Peaks. We're about halfway through the Decameron Film Festival. Let me just see here. I'm getting feedback. We're halfway through the Decameron Film Festival. And so far, all the episodes have been, they have exceeded my expectations, to say the least. They've been very good, all of them. Yesterday, we had E. Michael Jones on. We were talking about Salo. Friday, we had Jared Taylor. And like I said, we're halfway through the festival. And you can find the entire schedule on our website, guidetoculture.org. So you can find past episodes and future episodes and all the links there. So make sure to check that out. And also make sure to hit the like button on this video if you do like it, and subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. And also make sure to hit the bell next to the subscribe button so you get all notifications. And follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter is real_GTK for Guide to Culture, and we post daily updates there. And now we also have a Telegram channel where you can follow our work, so you can subscribe to that by the link that I'm showing on the screen now. And also remember Entropy, because our work and this channel depends on your support. So if you want to ask any questions to the guest, and if you want to support our work, you can send questions through Entropy. And the link is on the screen now, and all the links are below. So you can find them below, and make sure to participate in the show by asking questions, because we're going to read all the Entropy questions at the end of every live stream. And also, if you want to send donations, which are very much appreciated and needed, you can do that through Entropy. Just click Send Paid Chat. And I also want to remind you of a couple of upcoming shows. First, Eunice Locke and Tina Wieck are hosting new shows, a new show in English where they have many prominent guests. And the best way to follow that is through Tina Wieck's Twitter account, The Swan of Tunela. And then I also want to remind you of a debate that Greg Johnson has coming up in the week. And the best way to follow that is through Twitter. That's going to be a very big debate. And last of all, before we introduce the guest, I want to mention the amazing artwork that we have for this episode, because we did have a competition for making the best YouTube image for this episode, and the current one that is up and the winner was a woman called Walpurgishalle. And you can find all the other images on our Twitter account. So make sure to check that out. There are some really, really good contributions and some really good art. So it's time to bring on our guest for tonight. And this is going to be very interesting. He has a postgraduate degree in philosophy and a PhD in sociology. He has been head of the International Relations Department and head of Center for Conservative Studies at the Moscow State University. He has had leading roles in several controversial movements, including the National Bolshevik Movement. He has written numerous books on culture, philosophy, politics, spiritual esoteric topics. He has translated Julius Evola into Russian. He has been claimed to be a sort of gray eminence in Russia. So Dr. Alexander Dugin, very welcome back for the second time to Guide to Culture. And please tell us where we can read more about your work. Let me see here. You're still on mute. There we go. Yes, welcome.
Hello. Hi, all. Thank you for inviting me. So my books are translated in English and many other languages. Most of all are published in the United States by Arctos Publishing House. You can as well read my texts on 4pt.su site or in geopolitica.ru in English sections. And 4pt.su, you can find almost in all languages some texts. But let us go to the argument. So I am very passionate about the topic, the main topic. We could speak about political theory, about coronavirus and how happy I am having all this world order being crashed in the last 2 months. So I'm really happy I could recognize. But let us speak about Lynch.
Yes, definitely. Because the first film that I suggested was by Bulgakov, Heart of a Dog. You didn't think that was very interesting. And then actually a Russian friend, a female Russian friend of mine, she said that, well, Dugin is actually very interested in David Lynch and Lars von Trier. So I thought, I've wanted to talk about Twin Peaks for many, many years, and I thought this was a golden opportunity. So why don't we just dive right into Twin Peaks? Can you tell us what, you know, David Lynch and Twin Peaks means to you?
So first of all, I think that almost all production of David Lynch is of so high quality that I admire this capacity to combine not too much popular, rather marginal psychological or philosophical or artist inspiration, surrealism, occultism, and the other thing in the way to get it accessible to the masses. So Lynch combined working very professionally with all the prejudices, all the possible prejudices of the large public, with all idiotism embedded in that, using that not to use it, not to manipulate it, not to abuse it in a commercial manner, and not to awake, not to destroy. That is middle way, so middle path, between using of idiocy of the common people and trying to awaken them, to save them. So that is middle path, and everybody could interpret that in his or her own way. So you could take from this lesson of his incredibly impressive art, some philosophical lesson, or you could be just amused by the high quality or the dramatic story about the story, about the way to tell it. And I am very as well aware, I am fan of early Lynch, not only on Twin Peaks. For example, I admire the series of On the Air, a very stupid comedy, but I think that is the real chef d'oeuvre of this cinema, as well made with the Frost, On the Air. It will, so that is rare, but it is already all Lynch inside. So, and I appreciate that in manner to a little bit to speak on the same in the same language. It's ventriloquality of Lynch. He speaks, he addresses to completely different level of the public, of the audience, in the, with the same words. So that is double language, but very, very conscious, very ironically used. And I think this double language, finally, that we need, because when we try to bring some truths too close to the masses, we are perverting them. When we exploit the stupidity of the common man or common woman, that is not honest, I think, it's too much. So I think that this ironical way to treat the half surrealist, half realist topics in the same moments, in the unity of intention, mental act, as Brentano said, it is the real art. So I'm comparing what I see with Tarantino, with Lynch, or with people like them, more than with classics of New Wave or something like that. I really appreciate this manner to speak with the people, because nobody deserves now the real open speech, because it will be perverted immediately. But we shouldn't too much exploit the people. We should let them a kind of marked way out, not to try them to pull them totally out of the illusion of the banal Lebenswelt life world, but not to push them too much more and more, as the mainstream media does, because mainstream media is a criminal. Mainstream art is criminal because it abuses and abuses the stupidity on the man. And that is criminalizing. And the people like David Lynch is or in the middle, on the edge, between the culture of awakening, of the real awakening, that should be absolutely marginalized by the definition, and mainstream. So that balance, I think, maybe in some way I am trying to do the same in the politics, in the philosophy, in the culture, because I have a relatively big following, not because of my more, I think, more important contributions to Heidegger, to some metaphysics of Plato, but rather about some more or less, sometimes not really successful metaphysical jokes or gags. So I'm trying to do more or less the same, because to take too seriously the topics, or too easily the people of today's world, I think there are two extremes we should avoid.
Yes, because it's obvious that David Lynch is a very sort of high caliber artist. He's a spiritual man as well, and has many thoughts on philosophy. But his works are in many of his works, and definitely Twin Peaks, are very accessible to the public, and that's what makes them so so interesting. And Twin Peaks definitely has had a sort of a revival over the last few years, definitely. But what do you think about? I mean, this is a topic that I've thought a whole lot about, and I want to start us on this track in the conversation, and that is the kind of idyllic, ideal society that David Lynch portrays in Twin Peaks. And I discussed this on a previous episode about Stephen King's work, The Stand, because these are works that are oftentimes popular among liberals, and definitely the sort of leftist hipsters, they love Twin Peaks. But the thing is that the society that David Lynch portrays in Twin Peaks is a very sort of, it has deep roots. It's everything but sort of rootless, liberal, cosmopolitan. It's actually a very sort of a rooted, traditional, conservative, really, society in a way, because they belong in a very specific place. Usually the sort of liberal narrative is people going from the countryside to the big cities. But here instead we have Dale Cooper coming from the big cities. He is an FBI agent, and he sort of falls in love with this small place where they have sort of real magic going on. And there's just so much to say about that the ideal society that they portray is the opposite of modern liberalism. What do you think about those things?
Oh, very interesting remark. I didn't think about that, but I find that very correct and very very pertinent. So when I have written the book on American Logos. My book is dedicated to American Logos, to North American civilization. And studying North American civilization, I have discovered the things I didn't know before. That is a part of my project, Nomarchia, the Wars of Mind. And when I describe civilization or society there in this project, I'm trying to be the part of it, not to describe from outside, but to identify myself as long as it is possible, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I could not judge them from, for example, being Russian. So that went for all my books in this series, and there are 24 books I have written on the topics, and one of them was dedicated to American identity. And normally, I'm very critical to American civilization, this liberalism, this modernity, this materialism, absence of roots, precisely. But when I've tried to describe American Logos, I came to the conclusion, totally unexpected for myself, for example, that American Logos, it is pragmatism. But pragmatism is something very, very different from Anglo-Saxon utilitarianism of the Jeremiah Bentham. American pragmatism of Peirce, of James, but as well of Thoreau, for example, it is completely different. The idea of American logos, of American mind, in my eyes, in my understanding, is the absence, total absence of prescribed normativity for the subject and the object. That is different. So in pragmatism, the only thing really is important is interaction. It works or it doesn't work. So the ontology, the being, is put in between, not inside of the subject, as in idealism, but not on the side of the object, of the matter. So, and that gives a huge amount of real freedom, because you can be everybody inside of yourself. And nobody could say, oh no, you are wrong about your subject, because nobody cares about your subject. So you have this huge amount of very special, a little bit ironic freedom to represent Santa Claus, or whoever, for example, Elvis Presley. You could say, I am Elvis Presley, and nobody could deny that. If you think you are Elvis Presley in the United States, you really are Elvis Presley. Nobody should dare to say, oh no, you aren't. Because there is no prescribed norms for subject. The same for the object. You can pretend that this object is everything you like. Black Loach, the resurrected Laura Palmer, or something, or UFO, or aliens. It is up to you to define the object. And nobody could say, oh, you are wrong. If it works for you, it is work for you. It is, if you are happy with aliens being Elvis Presley, nobody could say, oh no, that is crazy. No, that is anti-American to affirm that if you pretend to be Elvis Presley, someone knows better than you. That is anti-American. That all the history of pragmatism. And I think I see that in Lynch. So this relativity of the norms concerning what is reality of inner world or outer world. Only the meeting point between them, that is important. And that is Twin Peaks, something that exists, something traditional America as it is, and at the same time, it is utopian. That is the place that that doesn't exist. So this Twin Peaks, it is a kind of meeting between the reality and irreality in the pragmatic way. So Lynch don't want to say us, you are wrong, Americans, you are wrong, moderns. You should awaken to the real spiritual richness of the world. No, he doesn't care at all about the modernity or the spirituality of our audience. But he carefully shows this meeting point between a totally free subject and totally free object. So they could interact in many, many ways, not in one way. So on one hand, the Laura Palmer was dead. On the continuation of the series, it was not the case. So in one situation, Dale Cooper is good guy. In the other situation, he is not so good. He is bad guy. He is Bob. At the same time, he is someone very, very sympathetic who has totally forgotten who he was and who he is. So all these Dale Coopers, they have total right to exist in American universe. And I think the only way how we could judge Lynch's works as really revolutionary and anti-liberal, because modern American liberals are absolutely anti-pragmatic. They are, in that sense, they are anti-Americans. They say, no, we are prescribing you to be like that, to think that that is politically correct and everything else not. It is just humiliation for American mind, because American mind could not agree with one thing, with the other thing, but nobody could say what is, neither inside us nor outside us. And Lynch, it is absolutely, in my opinion, maybe I'm wrong, it is absolutely American director, because he making American films about real America. And I think that from European eyes, that should be totally crazy, because Europeans, they are dealing with the prescribing normative of what should be subject, what is object, how is the reality, materiality, scientific truths, ethic laws, and so on. And I think in that sense, I was seduced by Lynch from the beginning. Admired him, but after finishing my book on American logos, where, by the way, I didn't cite it, Lynch, but I think I have gained better understanding of what his art is, and I am continue to follow him. I am very satisfied with that small film about Han. About a little film when he
the art life.
Yes. Lynch. He was a policeman who judged the Han. Han captured on the train station. Totally crazy story when Han speaking with him but I think this short. Video is really great and really American. So I think American Revolution should start as something surrealistic or pragmatic. So not for too much realism. If something works, it's already good. If it works for you, if it works for the other, for other you don't care. But if it works for you, so you have all the right in the universe to continue to do this the same to the same beliefs of the reality. And Peirce, the founder of pragmatism, was very interesting author, and I think that is maybe I suggest the Heideggerian reading of pragmatism in order to understand better maybe this phenomenology of American culture.
Yeah, that's a very interesting take. I haven't thought about that before. The thing you say about pragmatism as a philosophy, which is that, you know, you have to, it's sort of experimental. You interact with things and you see what works, whereas now you have a complete normativity that has nothing to do with if it works or not. It is the opposite. If it doesn't work, the more the better. You know, that is a very interesting observation. But I think that with artists, many artists, they don't have a very good analytic mind. They don't think in terms of philosophy, concept, and analysis. They paint a picture that they sort of fall in love with. And I think this is the interesting thing, that so many people have fallen in love with Twin Peaks and the picture that he paints. And that is a sort of radical, sort of reactionary picture of society that is the opposite of the ideal today, which would be, the ideal today wouldn't be Twin Peaks. The ideal would be like Los Angeles, where you have completely multi-ethnic society, and where you have no norms, and where you sort of, nothing really matters. Whereas in Twin Peaks, you have the Black Lodge and you have like the ultimate evil and the ultimate good, these characters that represent these ideals that are sort of not a part or allowed to be in modern society. And even like the sort of transgressive, I mean, a person like what's his name? David Duchovny's character, who is like a transvestite. That is just like now that would be the norm. But in the series, that's sort of like a surrealist element in the thing. Sort of it gives a sort of aesthetic effect of like weirdness. You know, that this is sort of a weird place where these things happen. And it's sort of the attraction to the countryside. There's a quote in a Russian cult film, Brat, Brother, from the 90s, where one of the sort of old mentor tells the young protagonist that the city will drain your life, or the city will sort of pull the life force out of you. So I think that these, both like David Lynch and Stephen King, they sort of portray a yearning back to our roots and back to the countryside and away from this modern society. Do you see any of that?
Yes, I agree. I didn't pay to that too much attention, but I see that you're right. So, but interesting about the lodges, I think that incidentally, David Lynch has reintroduced in Twin Peaks a kind of traditional topology. Because according to all the religions, including Christianity, to Islam, to Judaism, to Hinduism, to all existing tradition, including paganist one, the reality in where we live is just a part. It is just the level. And there is something beneath us, and there is something above. And Black Lodge, it is necessary dimension. So, it should exist according to the belief of the religion. So, Black Lodge is a kind of very realistic dimension of the topology of that three-dimensional in ontological sense being. So, Lynch, at the same time, I think he never insists too much on interpretation of his work. In that sense, he is artist. But at the same time, he's one of the most coherent artists, because in his interview, in his explanation, in his presentations, in his films, he follows the same line. He is not like he is not only inspired by something. He always continued to do some works, maybe not understanding fully the meaning of it. So I think one of the importance of the village and the life outside of the city, it is the returning to this ontological three-dimensionality of the being. Because if you are living in the small city or in a village, you are feeling better what is going on right beneath you and sometimes above you. So that is the openness. There is the kind of access to the two other religious dimensions we have lost with the beginning of the modernity. And the normal people, the small people, the banal people, the people outside of the huge city have conserved this understanding dimension. The lady with log, for example, speaking with log. The log, it is not as in the eyes of the high cultural liberal citizen of the big of New York City. It's something totally lost, totally forgotten. It is just a log, something in existence. But for this lady, it is something more. It is the spirit. It is the object of the high with high price. And living or not, but it is something valuable. And the same for all the people living on the earth. Earth is very important because the roots are there, and the point to access the other levels of the being are there, not in the city. So if you could remark in the log the being, you are living much richer life. So it is very, very important. And the personages, the figures of the Black Lodge, they are so expressive. So many people somehow understand that they knew them somehow. They are too close to us. They are too familiar. The big figures, small figure, they are normal figures of our mythology, traditional in the European mythology, because the dwarves and the giants, they people the earth before us, and they somehow live still on the margin of our perception. And when David Lynch gives them the possibility to return to our attention, to our intentional act, as Husserl would say, make them resurrect. So I think he restored this topology of the world, this three-dimensionality of the being, precisely in the American village. So America has gone until the end of the degradation during the modernity, I think, on one hand. But at the same hand, Julius Evola has said that decadent societies of the West, somehow and sometime, there will be the moment when they will understand the reason of this test, of this this special experiment, and they will resurrect, and they will organize the revolt against modernity, not quite less affected as the East, for example, but the Western societies who are more affected by the modernity, they will revolt, and that's in that moment the sun will rise from the West and not from the East. I think I see in something like that Raymond Tabelli or Jean Porvulesco wrote. So I think I could presume that David Lynch is one of these figure who prepare this change, radical, drastic change of the course of the sun that should rise from the West and United States that has made its way to the Black Lodge. They will return from that first before the other.
I think this is a fascinating take that you, because obviously a big part of modernity and the modern worldview is a sort of disenchantment with the world that we have sort of lost. It becomes meaningless in a way. But in David Lynch's work, and definitely in Twin Peaks, there is a sort of a deep meaning and a sort of magic in the world. And just like you said, I think that this sort of different dimensions, we have the underworld and the darkness, and we have the sort of very supremely good and everything in between, that is a very big part of bringing back a sort of a faith in a sort of magical aura of the world, and definitely with the dwarfs and with the giants who are sort of primordial beings, and he brings them back, and it's sort of like an intuitive understanding of archetypes that he brings to life, and there are just so many of these elements. There's this judge, I forget his name, this judge who comes in and who sort of, he says, I'll see you in Valhalla. He's like, he believes in, I mean, the good people are a part of this, they know something that everyone else doesn't know. And it's very fascinating. Do you want to say something about the return of Twin Peaks, the new season, the season 3 that came in 2017? Because let me just read you a comment that I got, for a previous episode of this, the Cameron Film Festival, someone wrote, SNGB, he wrote this: "For me, the magic of Twin Peaks, the return, was that it made fans long for a return to the atmosphere of the original series, but as soon as it comes back, it falls apart. We see glimpses of the atmosphere in some of what goes on around the police station, but for the most part, it feels more similar to Lynch's post-Twin Peaks works. When the classic Cooper character finally comes back, it feels exciting, just like the classic show has finally come back, but then then that feeling quickly fades away and we are left with a sense of emptiness. It feels very much like Lynch was trying to comment on nostalgia and how fickle it is in regard to the prevalence of reboots of classic franchises and how you can't keep the spirit of the original intact while also creating something new. It is fine art indeed." I think that was a very sort of interesting comment about the third season. What are your thoughts about that?
So I think it's description that I could agree because interesting. So Lynch has made very good continuation, and it was his work with the time. He has lived in the Black Lodge, something outside of the series during so many years. He has lost some figures of his show, and some they are still alive. And he continued precisely where he stopped. But the time was totally destructive. So the time, not the Lynch or his artistic capacities, the time when this America still existed. Now I think it is already we couldn't feel it. I see in the last in the third season, very good indeed in itself, but I see always decoration. So it was Hollywood scene to film, because it is not the place has disappeared. So there was the place. The place may be this semi half utopian, half real America. America place, but the place is very metaphysical, important themes as the earth, as the many other themes, it's synchronicity, the place and synchronicity. But somehow the time sometimes is stronger than eternity, than synchronicity. The time tries to attack this place, and I think that the third season is a kind of destruction of this place. So that is intrusion of the Black Lodge that has destroyed the first two seasons series place. And we are dealing with something as well objective. For example, when one of the brother of the innkeeper spoke with his leg being lost in the woods or in a bad tree, that was precisely object-oriented ontology. So now it is idea that the human body is the parliament of the organs. That is liberal idea, objective-oriented ontology, put in the reality of the uninterrupted in some way narrative. So it is really great. So as well, how was their meeting with David Bowie, being a kind of ball with something going inside. So that is really inside in the nature of things. So that was documentary, I think. So first, second, and third seasons are documentary of some special type of logic. It is not the films or purely artistic imaginative production. That is documentary of multidimensional reality. And there is something going on in this multidimensional reality. And Lynch in the third season has shown that something went wrong there, and there is no classical happy end. Neither there is a tragedy, but something went wrong with the time itself. Something went wrong with this surrealistic reality, not so much with the human reality. With human reality, everything much worse, I think. But as well, in this play, special Lynch's play, plays something, some very, very, very dangerous catastrophe arrived. And I think we need to decipher more that, not in a formalist way. So I don't think that Lynch would have some clear idea about what he is filming, what it's all about. And that is a kind of necessary precondition to make the films like that. So you should explore what is going on by making what is going on. It's very phenomenological. So we are not in the world. We are living in the world we are creating, in the moment we live in. So that is existential, and that is, we could call that existential existential surrealism. So Lynch created the reality and situations, filming them, not trying to tell some before existing story. So I think that we should respect his will, not to interpret too much, not to decipher third season or relations between third season and first two, but we need as well to see that there are the gaps in the reality, the holes, black holes in the reality. They have considerably grown more and more and more. So now the islands of reason are much more deplorable, isolated, and abandoned now. So we are in full growth of small people, small situation that have destroyed or finished, they finished to destroy the great narrative. So the small narrative they have destroyed. So I think that was everything about Black Lodge, the third season, not only about Dale Cooper or this ironical battle. So it is not so easy, I think, to decipher. So everything still is going on. So not only in the mind of David Lynch, something still is continuing to happen in deep America and in the world, in all the continents. Something like, and Lynch have grasped that he has made a little glance into this reality that we still need to discover. So it is not all about Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks, it is something that that is still ongoing as a process. So somehow we're still living, waiting, or remembering in the past or in the future, but in the present as well, we are still somehow linked to Twin Peaks.
Yes, and I think this is so fascinating because there is something about the third season which I think is fantastic. And just like this commenter said, that we get a glimpse of the same atmosphere. And there's so much about Twin Peaks that is about the feeling of nostalgia. And we sort of want to go back to this. And the music by Badalamenti is extremely nostalgic. And we want to go back to it. And in the third season, we sort of get glimpses of it. And then it goes away, just like the commenter said. And in the end, we are left unsatisfied in a way. I mean, the end is very... And I think obviously that must be intentional by Lynch to leave us unsatisfied. What do you think about the ending of the third season?
I think that is precisely, I was very satisfied. I think that the end was really great because it was the demonstration of what I'm calling the black miracle. So there is the miracle of resurrection of the dead or the reversal of the way the time is going on, but without the meaning, without the spiritual ground. So that is something that has happened. That was really marvelous, returning to the life of the dead lady, but that wasn't a real resurrection expected by Christians, but that was a kind of ironical resurrection. A resurrection physically, psychologically, mentally, exactly correct, but there was no spiritual meaning inside. So that was, I think that was great. We are living in the world of simulacra, and spiritual simulacra are more dangerous. So there was the miracle, there was the real solution, but that solution is unsatisfying because black miracle, or for example, of material immortality or creation of half human, half half robots, that will be the miracle, or the suffering of genome. That are the miracle of the modernity, of putting our mind, our brain in this cloud of the servers, or resurrection of death. That's so. That is the real miracle, but it leaves us profoundly unsatisfied. So I think that's precisely the message of Lynch. So there are still all kind of miracles, all kind of myths, but we didn't lose we didn't lose the miracles. We did lose the sense, the meaning, not only of miracles, but as well of the practical life. So there's a great and growing loss of the meaning in the reality. It is really dangerous threat, and that is the Black Lodge. So the Black Lodge returning or intruding into the our world. Black Lodge destroyed first of all the links, semantic links between the things, and the drugs other form of perversion, or liberal democracy, other form to destroy the kind of the chains of the meaning. So rational, semantical ground to of the world, and the world becomes totally perforated with the holes in any moment. So you can fall in this hole, you can return from the hole, but it will be not you, it will be something else. So this meaningless black miracle with the false a resurrection that is material, totally true, but spiritually totally false, is, I think, that would be a great final scene.
It is. It's very haunting, and the scream is very haunting, just as it is in previous seasons with Laura Palmer screaming. Is there anything else you want to bring up about Twin Peaks?
Interesting, about the cry, the final cry. You know, that was in the Plato Republic. The ending of the Republic is dedicated to the post-mortem, after that experience of some warrior called Air. And he has described the very special sound he has heard in the hell. When the tyrant in the hell approached the exit from the hell, when the river, hell's river, arrived to the middle level reality, and when the tyrant wasn't permitted to get out, there was the cry. There was the cry of the river. And that was so terrible and so horrible that you are already almost resurrected. But there is some inner cry. No, that is not time for you. Go back to the Black Lodge. Go back to every one of us. So I think that this cry was really, really prophetic cry of Laura Palmer.
Yeah, it's so effectful. It's really fantastic. And Twin Peaks, for some reason, it is just people just fall in love with it. I mean, it's not many TV shows from the early 90s that people that have such a sort of devoted cult following as Twin Peaks. It's just something. It's almost like it's a part of our lore now. It's a part of our mythology of the world we live in. It has that kind of character that it's sort of a part of our nature, just like the Iliad or other sort of classical works of art that sort of we can't imagine being without them once we have them, you know. And that's it's something very profound about it. Do you want to say something else about David Lynch or some other of his works before we go to any questions?
So, but nothing particular. Yeah, maybe I will better deal directly with questions.
Sure. So if you have any questions to Dr. Dugin, please send them through Entropy, and we'll go through them in a moment. We have a couple of chats there, not really any questions. Can you tell me about which other films by what else by David Lynch you mentioned on the air? I haven't seen it, so I can't really comment upon it. But what about the other films that he created, like Blue Velvet or anything?
So Mulholland Drive, I have seen all his films, but On the Air is really interesting because it's so stupid. really, you couldn't imagine that. So, but there is a kind, and I have studied the phenomenon of stupidity. It is not so easy to understand. It's not just reduction of the mind, of the reason. So stupidity, it is a kind of mystery, because when there is this way from the normal intelligence, middle level intelligence, to the real stupidity, there are so many labyrinths, so many turns, so many unsuspected ties, associations. So to get really stupid, it is art. And I think Lee on the air, he has shown that the huge kind of different kind of stupidities. So that is a kind of encyclopedia of not of the craziness. It is not about the craziness. Craziness is much richer and unknowledged phenomenon. But I could not remember. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I have lost something. The serious philosophical works about the phenomenology of the stupidity, and I think we lack that. We have written so many things about schizophrenia, about paranoia, about all kind of perversion, but that we are dealing always with very, very high developed mind, including in the psychic illness. But when we are coming down to the real stupidity, that was, I think, Lynch was fascinated by that. In Twin Peaks as well, in other his films, he is a little bit enchanted in front of this real stupidity. And whenever he remarks that, he is fixed. He is totally frozen, as in front of the some miracle of some revelation. So stupidity can be really, really profound. So you couldn't suspect such kind of the total loss of human qualities. And when you see that, that you could fall in love with that. So the stupidity is very special part of our of anthropology and of philosophy, and it is not just reduction, just small kind. It is not quantitative. It is qualitative. When you're a real idiot, it is amazing. So he could always astonish you. Because, I think that on the air, I strongly recommend you to see the series and to see it philosophical way. So it is very, very difficult to imagine something more stupid than that, but you should make that as philosophical exercise. In after the 10 minutes, you will have that thought, what I'm doing here, who I am. Not as stupid, as incredible, strange creature that is the other film of Stickler, that it is judged as one of the worst kind of film, that is the movie of worst kind. Stickler, incredible, strange creature, because precisely because Stigler has made very stupid, incredibly stupid and very bad film. And Lynch has made it on the air extremely good film, but so stupid that you couldn't imagine that it could be real. So I think that, and many other things, I think that that is in all his films, he gives us one of the key to American identity. He's very American, I think. So, for example, his work is very popular here as well, or in Europe, but nobody except the real Americans could feel, could penetrate the universe of David Lynch. It is totally American. I think it's very patriotic, including when you are discovering the universe of the normal redneck or stupid people, or including the people working in Hollywood. They are so stupid as well in their way. So it is really incredible. And it is not the judgment. It is not accusation in the case of Lynch. It is not as well the pardon. It is not accusation, neither accusation nor pardon. It just attracts our attention to the things that are really, really amazing, I think, and very, very interesting. So in other films, he as well, he explores the same things. For example, there, I appreciate as well Inner Empire. So, but it is a very stupid film as well, but in very high aesthetic way. So that is.
I didn't understand Inland Empire at all. Could you just say something about it? I find it interesting.
Precisely how some levels of human soul are constructed. There are some levels with no exit. There are some entrance without meaning. That, so that is the real realistic picture of human of phenomenology. It is just phenomenological description. It is something like descriptive psychology that doesn't pretend to judge, to observe, but just to explore. That is exploration of how the soul is, modern soul, the American soul, how dispersed, unlogical, there is no narratives, there is no strong principles, everything is combined. Human and animals are already mixed together with rabbits, famous rabbits scene. And I think that it's precisely the realistic insight in what is going on in us, in the people, without any strong or clearly defined narrative. So I like Inland Empire as well.
It's very interesting what you mentioned about stupidity, because Erasmus wrote this book on folly or whatever. Yes, it's very funny to talk about. It's very funny to think about stupidity.
Stultitia Laudens, Erasmus Stultitia Laudens. It is kind of about glorifying the stupidity. Exactly. Yeah. In Latin, the name of Erasmus. But it was just a parody. That was not serious study. And what I'm speaking of, it is serious, based philosophically, authentic study of sociological study of stupidity. Some sociological authors, or followers of Husserl, they tried to establish some phenomenological sociology in the United States, and they have gathered some interesting case of, for example, the principle to get the people to the court without knowledge of the law. It's the normal witnesses. The witnesses who, not the witnesses, I have forgotten the name, who make the last judgment, but not the judges, who are...
The jury?
Jury, yeah. who are just the people from the corner.
The people okay, who are, well, maybe someone in the chat can tell us what it is. I'm not sure what it is, yeah.
Anyhow. I have lost the word. So, And we have in Russia, by the way, such a principle. So we know only by the film and by the books of history how it is called. The people who are gathered from by the chance, they're chosen by the chance, not specially, and how they could make a sane decision concerning the issue of very complicated criminal case. It is just how the stupidity functions. So it is not the sameness, reduced sameness. That is a very strange, sometimes very weird assemblages of different rationalities, but of the basic level. So I think that we lack serious metaphysical analysis of stupidity.
Another one, just before we wrap up and just to read the questions, another one of Lynch's films that I really love is Lost Highway. It is one of the most profoundest illustrations of love, because it's based on these sort of levels of deception and illusion, and you sort of imagine this sort of wonderful person, and then it's a monster, and it's a very, very profound and very dark movie, but it sort of really grabs you. What are your thoughts about Lost Highway?
That's great. As Blue Velvet, that is about the evil, an absolute evil that is the so terribly necessary element of our comfort, that more comfortable we feel, more horrible monster should be close to us. So that is that, because the people of the tradition, they understood very well, if you gain something, you should lose something. In our society, capitalist liberal society, we are living with the myth of absolute growth. Infinite growth. And this growth creates a kind of shadow of this growth. By the way, I think coronavirus is the shadow of this growth of economy. So that is something as monster, as maniac, that people who follows us always when we have some little normal middle people, middleman happiness. This happiness should be paid. And more we refuse to pay, closer to us, there is someone on the lost highway who persecutes us, who follows us. And that is the reestablishment of the balance of the human life, a very important part. So I think that is a kind of lost highway, and all the horrors and the real horrors. It is a kind of the act to remind us about that we should pay for everything. We should, if we want total growth, so we will have total crash. One could not be without that. So if we would balance our happiness where consciously with some loss, voluntary loss, sacrifice, suffering, so we could assure that the serious and unstable basis for our small happiness. When we forget that, there is already someone on the way after us. So that is, as well as paranoia, reflects that is embedded in our soul. And if there is nobody, he will or she will appear sooner or later. That is why I think this lost highway is so impressive, precisely because Lynch understands that deeper than others. So that is something to do with my first definition of him, passing on the middle way between exploiting the stupidity of the audience and awakening the people to the reality of the inner life. And going this exactly on the edge between both, he manages, he succeeds to create the real atmosphere. So there's more than normal history about maniac, something more realistic, something more dealing with the realities of our soul. So he penetrates through the screen. The films, the movies of Lynch, they are penetrated through the screen. They something as the Japanese horror, it was Ring, when some spiritual infernal creature passed through the screen of the computer. So there is something in like that with Lynch. So he touches something more than just our normal reactions on the horror stories. So there is something really evil in his art that I think that is precisely the sign of his deep involvement in the study of human mind.
All right, that has been very interesting. We have a few chats through entropy, and I think we'll just go to them now. First of all, we have Freddie R. He sent us $10. Thank you so much for that, Freddie. And then Freddie sent $10 again, and he said, "Till this moment, I couldn't believe that the Alexander Dugin would appear on the screen." Thank you very much for that. It did indeed happen. And then Reactionary in Red sent €3. He said he wrote something in Russian. I don't know what that is because I don't read Cyrillic. Looking forward to this discussion, Alexander Gelievich, love from a Slavic brother from Poland. Thank you very much for that donation. And then we have... one of the mysteries that stick with me from season 3 is Billy. This is from Varangian. Sorry about that. Varangian sends $15. He says, "One of the mysteries that stick with me from season 3 is Billy. What is his significance? Who is he? Does he play into the larger picture, or is he a bauble to play with? What are your thoughts?" Do you have any thoughts about Billy from the third season?
I have no special vision of his figures, but I could make a kind of more general statement that if we think that we know what this figure of Lynch represents on what role she or he plays, we are already wrong, because we couldn't know exactly, couldn't decipher the role they really plays in his films, because he himself, it seems to me, neither Frost, they just don't know. Not because they do things without meaning, but they try to explore the meaning of the thing they are doing. It is a little bit different. So Billy is as much enigmatic as everybody else, as the dwarf. So for myself, I put all figures of all three seasons, exactly, including the corpse of the Laura Palmer from the beginning, on the same ontological level. They are real real figures. They should mean something, but nobody will know before we try what it is exactly, because it's a kind of the set of archetypes. We all have these archetypes in ourselves, inside of us, and we need to it is up to us to decide. So it is up to us to project our will on the figure. There is not only one or two or three reading of Lynch. The Lynch is totally open system of interpretation. It's my opinion. So Billy is not lesser way enigmatic or more enigmatic than other. And there is nobody totally meaningless there and not very totally meaningful as well in the form of Lynch.
Everything is an enigma in Lynch, definitely. Then we have $5 from The Thin Red Line. Thank you very much for that, through Entropy. He says, what does Dugin think of Eyes Wide Shut? Are you familiar with that film? Eyes Wide Shut, yeah. By Stanley Kubrick.
It's not Lynch. Yes, that's a nice film about global government or deep state or some group. It is the Black Lodge put in the more realistic way. So I think that is nice movie. I like it. But I prefer to speak about Lynch. So Lynch, it is being phenomenologist and a follower of Heidegger and Husserl, it's hard to me to speak at the same time or on the different subjects, on different topics. So I'm concentrated more or less on the Lynch. Lynch is my intentional object. So I'm halfway into his universe. So the universe of Kubrick is the other very, very exciting thing, but just different.
It's a different question, yeah. And the last question is also about a different topic. It's from Henry Walker. He sent us $3, and that is a question about immigration policy in Russia. I don't really know if we should bring that up. Do you want to hear that question?
Yes, but we have not such drastic.
That's not the topic. No, that's not the topic of today. Maybe.
I could say that we have no such huge problem with immigration as other countries have. So our immigration are mostly from the other side parts of Russia, that they are our citizens. They are from maybe different ethnic groups that create some tensions in the society and sometimes really real tensions. And the other part, huge part, is from the ex-Soviet Republic. They are more or less as well culturally Russian. So we have no such phenomenon as totally strange ethnic groups coming to us. But that has nothing to do with Lynch.
That's a different topic, yes. Maybe you'll come back another time and talk about other topics.
I appreciate your remark about that. The almost all his films, they are normal Americans. They are not immigration. They are not mixed. There are no necessary elements of LGBT plus culture. If there is something, that is natural, like always was. So when we don't thematize perversion has as a norm, that perversion is necessary as norm is, because without perversion, no norm. But when we say that perversion is the norm, we are destroying or humiliating the normal people. So I'm not, I could accept some weird case in the reality, but I think when they become normative way to follow or mixture or that destroys collective identity. And in that sense, I agree with you that Lynch describes mostly normal identity, balanced identity, the people sharing more or less their strange views. So that is pragmatic society. And where there is transgender figure in Twin Peaks, they are somehow natural. They are redneck transgender, not liberal Hillary Clinton followers. So the same with immigration. There is normal immigration that you could accept, you could assimilate and integrate. And there is extra, not necessary, totally, exactly. I would say toxic immigration. And in Russia, We have no such amount of toxic immigration as in other country. The situation is better, but it could arrive. We will still go the same Western way. Maybe we will have the same problem.
Well, thank you very much for that that donation, Henry Walker. And thank everyone who has sent donations and questions through Entropy. You can also do that while we're not streaming. So if you have questions for the next guest for tomorrow evening, you can send them already now. And thank you very much for this conversation, Dr. Dugin. This has been very enlightening and very entertaining. It's been a very fun topic. I hope you've enjoyed it as well.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for invitation.
So, again, I want to remind you guys at home that this film festival just continues next week. Tomorrow evening, we have Philosophicat and Überfolk with George as well, talking about The Lord of the Rings. We have Semigog, who is going to talk about 28 Days Later on Tuesday. John Morgan is going to talk about Runaway Train on Wednesday. Guillaume Durocher is going to talk about the Battle of Algiers on Thursday. Ricardo Duchesne is going to talk about the Bridge on the River Kwai on Friday. On Saturday, we have Kevin MacDonald. He is going to talk about a documentary about Noam Chomsky called Requiem for the American Dream. And on Sunday, we have Gilad Atzmon. He is going to talk about Metropolis. So make sure to check in guide2culture.org to follow the whole schedule and follow us on Twitter and so on. And also remember to check out the new show by Tina and Eunice. You find their Twitter and also the debate with Greg Johnson in the upcoming week. So thank you, everyone. Thank you, everyone who sent questions. I hope you've enjoyed it, as I have. So I'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.